Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. Us, BBM, Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, text the brother, 045-714-0550, and our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. Yes, we are the elders of tomorrow. Hear our voice. That's the slogan for Children's Day. National Aboriginal Island is Torres Strait Island Day, Children's Day, 4th of August 2020. So a big shout out to all our beautiful children out there and all our beautiful mums, dads, grannies, grandpops, akas, ates, and looking after our young ones. That's what it's all about. So it is a special day for them. But I like to always say that our Children's Day is 24/7, 365 days a year. That's every day. Have you saying yarn up strong when you catch up? Have a yarn with Aunty Rachel Atkinson, founding CEO for Palm Island Community Company Limited, PICC, and Board Secretary for SNAIC, in celebrating today's being the National Aboriginal Island Day, Children's Day 2020. And we do have Aunty Rachel on the line. Aunty Rachel, very good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Aunty, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Okay, first of all, my mob is down in Victoria. I'm a Yorta Yorta, but I've lived in town for over 40 years.
Yes.
So not quite a Murray, still a Koori.
We'll claim you.
But definitely very proud Yorta Yorta. And I want to say, you know, call a cheer out for my mob down there because they're doing it hard with the coronavirus.
Yes, they are.
And I love them all.
Beautiful. Thank you. Lovely words there. Thank you very much. Yes. Well, today being National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island Children's Day 2020, you being a board secretary of SNAIC, how important is it for our beautiful children to recognise them?
Oh, look, it's our life, you know. We must protect our children. We must, you know, develop a really healthy, good pathway for our kids. Because if we start losing our children lost to the system, the same old, stolen generation, all that, we then start, you know, diminishing who we are in our culture. Our children are our future.
Exactly, and that's the slogan for this year's National Aboriginal Day Children's Day celebration.
Yes.
Hear our voice, and we are the elders of tomorrow, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if we just keep saying that over and over to give our children a sense of hope and connection to who we are, particularly our kids that are lost in the system somewhere, we've got to find them back because they are our elders, no matter where they are, you know, from the bottom of Tasmania to the tip of Australia. These are our kids and they're our elders and our future.
Exactly. So how long have you been a board secretary for SNAIC?
I've been part of SNAIC for probably on and off for about 20-something years. Working in child protection and early childhood, I've been sort of, every bit of work I do has an element of that. But obviously, you know, it's one of my key passion and, you know, it's something that all of us have got to sort because our children are our most vulnerable.
Sure,
and
exactly.
And we never want to see what's happened. Also can't leave the chair of the state peak body, Quake. So there's, and I've been involved in Quake for even in the old ACCA days. So,
yes.
You know.
First Nation Health Organisation.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
So do all with a passion, you know, Auntie, and love the work that you're doing, and you're loving the space that you're in. The fact that you've been in the space for so long, that shows the passion is there. But also lead the way to young brothers and sisters as well to step up and be a part of black organisations across this country. You can do your bit on a voluntary level, or if not, a paid level. Yeah, whatever the case may be, it's about supporting our own. Yes.
Oh, look, absolutely. Like, I'm, you know, CEO of the Palm Island Community Company. I mean, the investment in local employment, youth employment, is our future. If we don't go down that track, we've got to build capacity. We've got to also encourage young people to take the baton from us and go forward now. And we're doing that with our boards. We're bringing in young people sitting on boards. But I think that the success would be is engage, recruit, and get local young people into this space. Because it's their future too.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's about stepping up and grabbing, like I said, handing the baton over, and they're taking over the reins and moving our organisations forward in this world of business, but also a powerful tool vehicle we can use and empower our mob, yes?
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And look, I go on, our solution is that we've got to take on the leadership of this, not sit in the driver's seat and not sit in the as a passenger. We have to drive this. And I think if we go on the fact that we are the leaders and the owners of our own, you know, solutions, we're going to start getting positive results. So I think government, other sectors out there have to hand over that driver's seat to us, not continually know what's best for us, because they don't. It's us, and our future leaders are going to take this on board and bring our kids up to be those future elders of tomorrow and have a voice.
Exactly. Thank you very much for sharing, Auntie Rachel. All the best to you and your family, your mob.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you very much for that too. I will. Okay, you take care.
Bye darling. Bye, Auntie. A beautiful young Auntie Rachel Atkinson, founding CEO for Palm Island Community Company Limited, PICC, and also board secretary for SNAIC. And they're looking with Yana there about today being National Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Children's Day 2020. So big shout out to all our beautiful children, but also our mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers, akas and nates, and looking after our young ones. But like I said, it's not only for today, it's 365 days a year, our beautiful children who are our future. And the theme for this year is we are the elderly of tomorrow, hear our voice. And so there it is for all our beautiful children, thinking of you, mob. All right, stay tuned. Your daily program, National Talk Black, have your say, 1-800-422-416. Yana with Bawley on Trevor Tim 2012, Murray from Nakari, taking right through 12 noon Queensland time here on National Talk Black. Murray Radio Station, BBM, Bummer Rip Media, 98.7 FM, 1-800-422-416. We'll be right back.
Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our national talk flag, your big yarning circle, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day. A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumblebrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can give us a call, have your say on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Now, women and money, financial abuse, money and family violence, migrants and money. COVID-19 has further entrapped women and children suffering family violence. They are locked in with their abuser. Economic fragility increases abuse while decreasing women's options of surviving alone. Economic abuse, often invisible, will become overwhelming. And migrant women experiencing family violence will be more vulnerable as their families overseas are unable to give them face-to-face support. Isolation, fear and entrapment are key elements of cohesive control at the centre of family violence. Cohesive control was criminalised in England and Wales in 2015 and in Ireland and Scotland 2015. COVID-19 has led to increased calls from women experiencing family violence. More worrying is the silence of women who are trapped. A tsunami of economic abuse reports by women threatens to flood services once they can safely seek help. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Supriya Singh, who's an honorary professor in the Graduate School of Business and Law at RMIT University. And her research is on the violence of money among the Anglo-Celtic and Indian communities and in Australia and the sociology of migration and remittance. On the line, Professor Supriya, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're talking about the vulnerable, yes, in COVID-19 regarding the pandemic and the disease itself, but also that's raised its ugly head is financial abuse, family violence because of money. Our women and their children, like you said, are trapped with their abuser. So not a good space to be in, yes?
No. A pandemic is not a good time to be trapped with your abuser.
So what are we doing? How can we help our beautiful women and children in regards to this situation?
I think it depends upon what the options are for the women. One of the issues in financial abuse generally, not just during the pandemic, mm-hmm. is that it is invisible.
Yes.
We don't talk about money, and we don't think of financial abuse as family violence. So naming and recognizing financial abuse as family violence is the first step.
Mm-hmm. And that's very important.
See, most of us think about family violence as physical assault.
Yes.
As being beaten. The fact that the abuser is denying us money, is appropriating our property, is sabotaging our opportunities for work, and basically making us feel helpless with money. That is what is entrapping women, removing their, taking away their human rights, and basically their sense of self and capability. Women are good with money. Women are actually much better than men
yes.
at looking after
second that.
Children.
I second that. I hear you. Yes.
You know, the women spend more of their money looking after their children and their home than men do.
Yes.
And that is why in very many countries, the policy is to direct children's benefits to women rather than to men. And women, particularly when they have less money, are able to do much more with it than anybody else.
More productive with the money. Money is the tool, and they know how to use that tool, don't they, women?
That's right. So we are not, when we're talking about financial abuse, you know, we are not saying that this is a lack of financial literacy or financial capability. Mm. What we are talking about is one person's pattern of behavior that seeks to diminish the other.
Mm.
And it's usually a man trying to abuse a woman.
And it's a a power hunt, isn't it? Man being in control, holding the women down in all aspects of their life, which is not good.
Yes, because family, it's part of, you know, we know that from all the reports and the research and the royal commissions that gender inequality engenders family violence.
Mm.
So there's a sense also of entitlement because men have generally earned more, and even if they've not earned more, they usually own more assets, particularly
sure.
land,
sure.
depending upon the kinship system and the inheritance patterns.
And I think ego would come to the table as well. Men get their noses out of joint if the woman is making more money or in a higher education status, so to speak. And that can deteriorate a man or frustrate a man, which is sad, isn't it?
Yes, it's like, you know, trying to diminish the woman to make yourself look and seem more
exactly.
powerful.
Exactly. Keep them down
but
to push themselves higher.
It's very interesting, you know, when a man is earning the money, usually the research that I've done shows that a woman will feel all right to use that money for the children and the home.
Yeah, well, the work
but
they do at home is the biggest job in the world.
Yes. But you see, the woman doesn't always feel entitled to spend it on what pleases her.
Yeah.
And so that is why a lot of women, even when they're looking after young children, take up part-time jobs that don't pay very much. But it gives a woman power to spend on what she pleases without monitoring, without surveillance.
Hmm.
But in my research, I found that when women are the main earners and men have stop providing, they have not stopped spending the woman's money on.
Yeah, it's when the shoe's on the other foot, so to speak, the man takes control of money even though it's not their money.
Hello.
Is that right? Yeah, can you hear me? Professor Supriya. I've just lost Professor Supriya Singh, Honorary Professor in Graduate School of Business and Law at RMIT University. And we're talking about women and money and financial abuse, money and family violence, migrants and money. I'll try and get it back to continue the conversation. But a very sad affair. But look, do add to the conversation. 1-800-422-416, National Talk Black. Yana with the ball, you on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. And stay tuned. We'll continue our conversation. Too deadly. You there, Professor?
Yes, hi, Trevor.
So sorry, we've got a pandemic on the phone and cut us out. I'll continue my conversation. Yeah, very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. We lost Professor Supriya Singh. We got it back on the line. Professor, you there?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry there. Had a COVID-19 on the phone there. Very sad. Got cut off, but it's all good. We're back in the conversation. I was just saying that the shoe's on the other foot when the woman's making the money and the man is at home, but then the man will tend to spend the money on himself. So it's the same rules apply for the man, which is sad.
Yes, yes. But, you know, these issues are not insurmountable. I think we need to learn how to talk about money in a more in a way that in an atmosphere, as one of the women in my research put it, mutual regard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to talk of money before you get into a partnership.
Yes.
To tell the other where you're coming from, as far, you know, how you've grown up with money, and listen to the other as to how the other has grown up with money. And it's also important to put on the table how you hope. I mean, this is if you are hoping for a partnership without subservience. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Well, when we're talking about a relationship, a partnership, a marriage even, well, we're talking about conversations at the table, all aspects of life, finance included.
Yes. And but, you know, we sometimes have very little practice in talking about money because our parents have not talked about money openly with us.
Well, they talk about the lack of it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we do observe what they do.
Yes.
But we don't know how they feel.
Sure, exactly, exactly.
And so if you can talk about how you want to deal with my money, our money, his money, you know. And if you... It's important to keep renegotiating and keep going back to this conversation as life stage changes. I mean, you deal with money differently when you are single.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when
exactly.
you're married. And then when you have children or one of you gets unemployed, sick, you know, retire, the balance between these different kinds of money change. And you must negotiate with each other that given what is available, how do you work it out so that each of you has their needs satisfied?
Well, exactly. As I mentioned earlier, Professor, that money is a tool. And if you're talking about a marriage, a relationship, in the same vehicle, heading in the same direction, well, we're talking about goals and dreams to what we want to achieve. And then money is the tool that helps that come to fruition. So if you're having that sort of a healthy conversation, it's good for the relationship.
Oh, absolutely. You see, we are used to thinking in economics terms about money, that money is impersonal. But money is deeply emotional. Mm. It is a medium of relationship. And you see, money can be particularly, say, in the Indian community, and I think in the indigenous communities, money is a medium of care.
Mm. Yes.
But if we are not careful and we allow this kind of coercion and control to take over, then money is used without morality.
Yes.
Like in the indigenous community, at least from what we have studied, it is something to be shared within a wider boundary of family than, say, perhaps the Anglo-Celtic couple, you know?
Yes.
And but there is a morality about it. There is a give and take, a sense of being there for the other.
Exactly.
And if you start using money without morality, then what you get is abuse.
So we're talking about the relationship, the conversation at the table in regarding moving forward. For our women out there who are financially abused, to reach out, talk to somebody about the situation. But the conversation we've had here in regarding family members listening, tell their younger ones, they'll tell their daughters, their granddaughters, if you get into a relationship, this is the sort of conversation you need to be having. So we can sort of talk about the prevention, you know, at the same time, we've still got
and
a problem and we need to squash it. Sorry?
And their sons.
And their sons, thank you. That's right, exactly. Exactly. My apologies, that is so true, yes.
Yes, you don't want your sons to turn.
No, exactly. Sorry, yes, that's right. Thank you, exactly. All of us need education in regarding loving, respecting our other half and using money as a tool. I always say, love people, use money. Don't love money, use people.
You're right.
Fantastic. Professor, nice talking with you. Thank you so very much. All the best to you. Look, you stay safe, stay warm, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. A lovely yarn with Professor Supriya Singh, who's an honorary professor in the Graduate School of Business and Law at RMIT University, and her research on the violence of money among the Anglo-Celtic and Indian communities in Australia, and the sociology of migration and remittance. But talking about women and money, financial abuse, money and family violence, migrants and money. So look, very important that we talk to our children in regard to loving, respect, respecting each other, but loving and respecting their partner, but using all conversations at the table regarding a relationship, and money is one of those conversations. Like I said, I love people, use money, don't love money, use people. But it's about men taking control as well in regard to their thought process and how they operate. Love and respect your other half, and money is the tool for both goals and dreams, family goals and dreams, and using that tool to turn the goals and dreams into fruition. So it's working together, and we need to stamp out abuse in all areas, and that's physical, mental, financial, all the above. Have your say, you mob. Yarn up strong, add to the conversation. 1-800-422-416. Yarn up with the ball, you're on Trevor Tim 20 Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, yarn up strong. 1-800-422-416.
Wamajeka, my name is Jetta. I come from the Wurundjeri and the Kalkajun people. Celebrating our culture is important for us kids, so we can grow up strong and be who we want to be. That's why on August 4 we celebrate Children's Day.
We are elders of tomorrow. Hear our voice.
Go to aboriginalchildrensday.com.au.
Songs of our time. Teachers of our stories.
This message is sponsored by Snake National Voice for our children.
Hey, what get on your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Want to hear what you're going to say, your mob? Give me a call. Let's have a yarn. Speaking of yarn, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Carl Briscoe, CEO of National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Worker Association. And talking about the sign of the new national agreement on closing the gap, which marks a historic turning point in relation between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and government. On the line, Carl, very good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Trev.
Fantastic, my brother. Thank you for coming to the program. First of all, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, so my mob's Googie Allenji, Mossman Daintree. I'm currently on Ngunnawal Country down in Canberra, working down there.
All right, fantastic.
The Natsua.
Yeah, brother, good. Fantastic. Thanks for coming to the program. So, look, here we have the sign of the new national agreement on closing the gap, which marks a historic turning point in relations between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and governments. So what's this turning point regarding the relationship between our mob and the government?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, when you look at the partnership that has been established since December 2018, you know, governments are actually working with peak state, territory and national organisations in forming up the way forward for the next 10 years for the targets as well as priority reform areas of the new Closing the Gap agreement. So that partnership has seemed to really flourished over the last couple of years with government.
Well, we're talking about hitting targets. The government hasn't really hit the targets, have they? I mean, like, I believe out of 9, 2 have been hit, so to speak. Numbers are low. So we're looking for a more of a focus on regarding closing the gap, because it sounded like a broken record, does it not, Carl?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you've got the 16, you know, socioeconomic targets. I suppose the major difference with this new 10-year agreement is the priority reform areas, you know, in terms of shared decision-making, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, you know, being involved in shared decision-making, you know, building the community health sector, you know, sustaining Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community control organisations to deliver the best possible care and services for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, improving access to institutions. So this is about, you know, governments and their organisations being accountable for closing the gap and providing culturally safe and responsive care and services to the needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples that they're funded to do.
Yes.
And as well as the last priority, the fourth one, is Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander-led data. So this particular priority reform area allows localised data to be used by community to actually implement our services and care towards closing the gap and set the priorities within a localised area.
So when you look at it, I mean, we're living in a different world at the moment, Carl, regarding COVID-19. And, you know, like hats off to all our mob. We've done really well in regard to COVID-19 and keeping our mob, especially our elders, safe. But the phrase and the affirmation they've been running with is, we are all in this together. Well, that's affirmation can also run with what we're talking about here regarding national agreement on closing the gap. We are all in this together. The Australian government need to be at the table, and it needs to be a robust conversation, but also action. And nothing beats black on black, and we've got to hold the reins as black people, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose that priority reform area around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community control sector, you know, delivering the highest quality care to our mob. You know, this is one of the major differences from the last 10 years of closing the gap. We're just focused on targets. We believe the Coalition of Peaks, and you heard Pat Turner talk about the priority reforms. Whilst the targets are there, they will be a monitoring mechanism, but we believe the priority reform areas will actually make the major change that we're seeking to improve the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Sure. And they say, you know, as you go a mile, see a mile, so to speak. So we've got a 10-year timeline in regard to making this all happen. So we've got to hit the ground running, don't we, Carl, as in First Nation people, and also the government got to be at the table. The old phrase, we're in the same vehicle heading in the same direction, yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it hasn't been an easy journey, and you kind of heard the Prime Minister allude to it in his address.
Yes.
It's been quite robust discussions to actually come up with the targets, but also the embedding of these priority reform areas within the new national agreement.
Look, it's fantastic. So hopefully, thumbs up moving forward. And we, you know, like when you look at the black deaths in custody and COVID-19 and unemployment and health and what have you, there is a lot of work to be done. And it's great that we are moving forward, virtually singing the same song, Carl.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, this change isn't going to happen overnight.
No.
But we believe that, you know, community control, health organisations coming together, you know, to actually work with the government to co-design this strategy will get better health outcomes rather than the government just designing the strategy on their own.
Yes.
So we believe that partnership approach and co-design will get us better health outcomes than what we currently have experienced.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. And we as First Nation media, we'll be keeping a close eye on it and in support, and also ready to, how you say, you know, jump on government if that's the case, you know. But it is a team effort. Thank you very much for sharing, Carl. All the best. You stay warm down there, my brother, and we'll talk soon, eh?
Not a problem, Trev. Thanks for having me on.
You take care, Carl. Bye-bye.
All right. See you later. Bye.
A deadly yarn there. Carl Briscoe, CEO of National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Work Association, and talking about the sign of new national agreement on closing the gap, marks historic turning point in relation between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and government. And they're talking about the highlights of the new national agreement on closing the gap and the priority reform areas. And there's four at this point in time. Shared decision making is one. Building the community control sector is two. Improving mainstream institution is three. And four, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander led data. So that's the four main areas in the government's working with the First Nation people, and the sign of new national agreement on closing the gap. Have your say and yarn up strong. Close this gap regarding our conversation on National Talk Black, your mob, 1-800-422-416. Love to hear from your mob. Yarn up with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Curry, taking you right through 12 noon Queensland time. And that deadly number again, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Fighting through the traffic, we're homeward bound. People
A very good morning, your Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. And you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, job support extension, a win for businesses, and one of the Business Motor Trades and Association of Queensland, MTA, they welcomed the Morrison government's announcement to extend the income support provided by JobKeeper for another 6 months. We're going to catch over yarn now with Dr. Brett Dale, Group Chief Executive Motor Trades Association of Queensland, MTA. A very good morning, Dr. Brett. How are you?
Morning, Trevor. I'm well, thanks. And you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. I always say money's not everything, but I rank it right up there with oxygen. Look, it's good to have this extension, and you must be feeling that way inclined as well in regard to your industry and your organisation, yes?
Certainly, Trevor. From our perspective, industry's done it tough. You know, I don't think any sector of Australian society hasn't suffered, but yes. Certainly we've been experiencing it. It's been tough. And some of our industry sectors haven't yet felt it because you've got supply chains that will impact them later in the year. And I would talk about companies that sell large farm machinery, etc. There's a 6 month delay in that, and then there was a stop in production offshore. So those businesses will really suffer, and their employers are regional Australians. So it's really important that the government looks at the opportunities to support those businesses, and that's why we welcome the extension.
Fantastic. Look, it gives you confidence in regard to operating your business and looking after the people who work in the industry, staff and families and what have you. And to me, that's a snowball effect in regarding, you know, high tide rises all ships is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, my job normally is to challenge government and tell them how bad they're doing things. You know, under the circumstances, yes. I take my hat off. They've really made some big decisions in very trying times. And these programs, sure, there's been a few hiccups and there's been the commentary around the mistakes. But let's look at what it's done for business. It's certainly kept people potentially employed. We don't know the full benefits yet, but certainly in my industry, it's made a big, big difference. And I feel like we're riding out those tough times. And,
sure.
And certainly with the review that's about to happen, we can afford to step down. We need to play our part as business and certainly be challenged with the less financial contribution. It's not something we say too often, but I understand the government is living on borrowed money.
Sure.
So every business needs to be challenged to think about how they can overcome this this challenge. But as long as government's still backing us, I think we can do it together.
Yeah, and I suppose it puts a different spin on that affirmation that they've been running with in regard to we are all in this together. There's a new meaning to it, isn't it?
There is, mate. And as I say, you know, we're normally working against government about their policy decisions. I think we are all in this together, and we have to think beyond our local issues. We have to think about Australia as one. And business and consumers, you can't separate those two. And certainly the government is trying to make good with programs that they've got on offer. There will still be more mistakes, but they have been responsive, and we do commend them for that.
Well, exactly, and we are travelling in uncharted waters, so to speak, and a pandemic globally has affected the economy across the globe, so to speak. So it is new grounds for the government as well, and as you say, hats off to them, doing the best they can in the circumstances. And we need to do our bits in regarding well, supporting local businesses as well. I think that we as Australians, that's a part that we can do, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And our message has been automotive industry is open. You know, the things that mobilise the entire nation are what our members deliver, whether that's selling petrol, servicing cars, selling motorcycles, selling farm machinery equipment. We're there. Mm. And I think, you know, the fact that Australians are recognising that we've got to provide some attempt at business as usual will drive that demand. And we will slowly but surely return to a good economy.
Fantastic. And staff are feeling good about the situation? I mean, like, smiles on dials, so to speak, and people back at in the offices and doing their job, which gives a nice feeling for the home front as well.
Absolutely, Trevor. And I would say that never before has there been such a great relationship between employers and employees. There's been a real degree of appreciation, people understanding the tough times of business, and people, business, understanding that impact on their employees and doing everything they could to keep them employed. And then with the government programs like JobKeeper, we were able to do that. And it looks like the majority have kept their jobs in our sector. You know, I'm still hearing now about job...